How's everybody doing? We have survived week one of being quarantined and are staring down the barrel of at least two more weeks like this. So some parts have been really challenging, while other parts I've been so grateful for. And one of the things I am super grateful for is the opportunity to just slow down and have my kids at home with me, to not have the evening rush of getting kids home, having homework, trying to do dinner, and then get kids to a million different locations. I'm actually loving the laid back feel of the whole day, actually, and getting to go back to the basics and focus on things that have always been really important to me, like family dinner time. So today's episode is with my friend Jessica, who is a family dinner time warrior. She has developed a program called Dominate Dinner, and I'm super excited to share with you her incredible program and philosophy on family dinner. So without further ado, here's my interview with Jessica Stembridge of Dominate Dinner. Hello, and welcome to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and I'm really excited about my guest today. Her name is Jessica Stembridge, and I met her a little while back when I was having angst over not providing dinner for my family. And so she showed up in my Instagram feed, and I just absolutely loved her story. I loved her program. I was able to be kind of a beta tester for something that she was working on, and I absolutely loved everything she taught about how to actually make dinner doable. And I am a tough nut to crack when it comes to that, because it's just hard.
It is.
So anyways, welcome my friend Jessica. How are you doing?
I am doing so great today. Thanks so much for having me on here. Just such a pleasure to be chatting with you about this today.
Awesome. So Jessica, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Sure. So I live outside of the Atlanta area, west of Atlanta. I have been married to my husband for almost 12 years. We have three children, two boys and a girl, ages 9, 7, and 5. So life is busy. I also work full-time outside of the home. So that adds a whole nother level of complexity. And then one of the things that is sort of a newer data point to my resume is that I'm a breast cancer survivor. So a couple years ago, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so that has just, it's now become part of who I am and part of my story.
That's awesome. Well, I would love to hear that story and how it led you to question whether or not you were using your God-given talents to help others.
Yeah. So in October of 2017 is when I was diagnosed, and it started off that I had a sore spot in my breast. And, you know, I just kept feeling a sore spot, kept feeling around, couldn't feel a lump. And then one day I did. And I was like, oh my gosh, I feel a lump. You know, I have no family history. So there was no reasonable, you know, it wasn't reasonable to think that it might be something, but I felt a lump nonetheless, called the doctor, went in, and did in fact have breast cancer. Initially, they thought it was stage one. And so there was some solace in that because, you know, I did what you're not supposed to do, which is Google it. But stage one breast cancer has a really good prognosis. And so I was like, okay, it's just stage one. Like, you know, this is going to stink, but you know, we've got this. And so went through a battery of tests, an MRI, and some other things, and go back to my doctor to get the results of the MRI. And she says, well, it looks like it spread to your lymph nodes and to your internal mammary glands. And so you're definitely stage two. You might be stage three. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I can't even like say the word stage three. You know what I mean? Like that was just so much to even, you know, think about. And she was like, okay, you have to see a medical oncologist like tomorrow. Like this is, it's growing from the time that we found it. Kind of cancer I had was super aggressive. So I went and saw an oncologist the next day, and he looked at my scan results or my MRI and said, Jessica, you're definitely stage three and you might be stage four. And I mean, just talk about like having the, you know, rug pulled out from under you, you know, just just not knowing is, and just for anybody who might not be familiar, stage four is considered incurable, okay? Stage three, they treat with the intent to cure, but stage four is considered incurable. And so to get to the brighter side of all this, I did have stage three. So thankfully, and I kind of joke about, you know, what makes the best, how do I say this? It makes having stage three easy when you thought you had stage four for 5 days. So it was like, oh, I only have stage three cancer. Yay. You know, when I've been before, it was such a scary thought. But, you know, going through that ended up being such a blessing. You know, my family just rallied around me, my friends, my church. And, you know, I just had to rely on God more than I ever had in my whole life. And it's just something that you can't explain until you've kind of been in that situation. But I did have to go through 5 months of chemo, a double mastectomy, 6 weeks of radiation. Then I had 2 reconstruction surgeries last year. And I'm still on hormone therapy that I'll be on for another 5 years, which is monthly injections for that. So, you know, it's not quite over yet, but I'm certainly, you know, on the other side of that hump. And, you know, I think I'm stronger for it and just have a whole new perspective on life that is just, I don't want to say impossible, but for me, it was impossible to view it from the lens of, you know, how fragile life is and how, you know, we have to make the most of our time.
Wow, that is incredible. Well, let's talk about your mission, which I definitely have benefited from. And I think my listeners will really find useful. Talk about your mission and what you kind of saw out of all of this, that your purpose for being here.
So for me, it was really like the questions that came to my head were, am I using my God-given gifts to help other people? And, you know, in some ways I was, but I just felt like there was this void of the things that I was really good at, the things that came natural to me. And it was like, am I really leveraging those to help other people? So I just started thinking about, okay, well, what are those things? You know, it's cooking, it's planning, it's being organized. You know, I mean, I'm a perfect model for it. I'm busy. You know, like I said, I work outside the home. I have 3 kids. They do activities. They're in scouts and baseball and dance. And, you know, so it was like, okay, this is what I'm, you know, I have gifts in. And then the question is there a need? And from hearing my friends, you know, everybody on social media, all the, you know, memes that pop up about, you know, how terrible and what a life sentence it is to have to come up with dinner every night. It was like, there was sort of an alignment there where it was like, okay, here is a need. And here I have these gifts that I can maybe help meet that need. And so that's sort of how it started.
Well, I am so grateful that you came to that conclusion, because for me, I feel like it's really, really, really important to provide a healthy meal for my family, especially at dinner time. But I swear the low point of every single day is the moment where I have to ask, what am I going to make for dinner tonight? And it's because I know it's so important, but it's like an inconsistency in my priorities. Like, I know it's important and I want to prioritize it. It just doesn't get prioritized.
Yeah.
So talk about how the Dominate Dinner process kind of came about.
So as I was getting to this thing where it's like, okay, here's a need and here's my skills, I started bouncing some ideas off of a friend, actually a coworker of mine. And I was thinking it was my recipes. You know, I was thinking, because I've had a food blog for a long time and I love sharing recipes. Like, I'm a recipe pusher. Like, if somebody's like, I like that, I'm like, do you want the recipe? Like, I'll send you the recipe. So I was like, oh, it's my recipes. And he said, Jessica, it's not your recipes that help you cook dinner every night. It's your process. And I was like, my process? And it was such like an eye opener, because I was like, well, I guess I do have a process. And so I remember going home and thinking like, okay, what is my process? And so I had to like roll back the years and think about, okay, when did dinner start getting hard? Well, it was after my son was born. You know, it's like, okay, well, what did I do to make it easier? And it's like, okay, I started meal planning one time a week because I only wanted to go to the grocery store one time a week. And then it was, you know, just taking a look at all these different frustrations that I encountered over the years, and what did I do to solve it? And so all of that came together to basically be a 6-step process. And so it was just funny because I couldn't even recognize that I had a process. And then when it was pointed out to me, I was like, oh yeah, I definitely have a process. So I'm so thankful for him for really, you know, pushing that out of me. So
yeah, me too. So I'm going to ask you about your process in a minute, but what do you think the real problem plaguing families who struggle with dinner time? Diagnose me. Let's hear it.
Okay. So I would have told you that it was, you need a recipe, you know, per my, I'm a recipe pusher. Okay. So, because that's what you hear out there. It's like, what to cook for dinner? What should I cook for dinner tonight? And so when I started off trying to validate my process, once I came up with a process, I did a lot of market research. And so one of my questions on my survey was, you know, what is the biggest hurdle for you to overcome with dinner time? And 90% of my respondents said it was figuring out what to cook for dinner. Okay. So you would think, ding, 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 that's it. But I think that is what is like, that is what their conscious mind tells them. Like, that's like the real problem that's in front of them at 5 o'clock, you know, every day. It's like, what am I going to cook for dinner?
Yes.
But that is not the root of the problem. The problem is that we don't have a process, that people don't have a plan. They don't have a process. So while knowing what to cook is important and having recipes that your family likes is important, that is not the root of the problem. The problem is a process, is, or the lack thereof. So,
okay. Walk us through your 6-step dominate dinner process.
Okay. So the first process is attitude adjustment. So I believe that so much of this stuff, we are like in our own way. You know, we talk negative about dinner. We make excuses. And I have always been such a believer in just having a positive attitude. It's not just some like, you know, foo-foo, you know, it's real. You know, whenever you approach an issue and you're like, I can't do that. It's like, of course you can't. Like, you're never going to make something a priority that you've already written yourself off for. You know what I mean? Like, I can't do this. Well, why, you know, how do you, you can't just start doing it well, if you, all you do is talk negative about it, you know? So for me, the first thing is getting rid of your excuses. You know, it's any of that negative self-talk, reframing it. You know, it's not like I'm not good at cooking dinner. It's, I have so much to learn. You know, I have a lot of potential. And just that subtle change in the way you talk to yourself about it, talk about your own, you know, skills and ability, I think have such a big impact on how you're able to come to the table and make it a priority. The other part of attitude adjustment is your whys, because I think having, you know, understanding why it's important to you helps you to make it a priority. And I suggest people go as far as writing it down, you know, and it might not just be one thing. Like for me, it's, and actually I've got this written down here. So my whys personally are that I wanted family dinners to be a normal part of my kids' childhood. I wanted my home to be the place where there's always food and people are always welcome. I wanted to feed my family minimally processed from scratch meals. And I wanted my kids to have exposure to as many different types of foods and not just kids' food as possible. Now, sidebar, that didn't prevent my youngest from being a picky eater. So I was all confident that I knew how to prevent a picky eater. I don't. That's just a fluke that my two older ones eat food. But anyways, that's another topic that we could get on.
Well, that's a beautiful why. I love that and agree with that 100%. That is strong, powerful why. Okay, so let's move on to 2.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So number 2, kitchen organization. So I have been through this when I read Marie Kondo's book, and I went through and I KonMari'd the heck out of my entire house, including my kitchen. And then what happened? But oh my gosh, I walk into my kitchen and I'm not totally overwhelmed. You know, it's like, oh, I could actually cook in this place because there's not stuff everywhere and I know where things are. And so almost 3 years ago, I moved into a new house. And so when I did that, I was super intentional about where things went, that it made sense, that I could easily get to it, not having clutter on my countertops. And that has like made the world of difference. Okay. So step 3 is kitchen tools. And so that is, it's not just having the fancy tools, which there are some of those fancy tools like an Instant Pot and now an air fryer that I am like a huge believer in, but really this gets down to basics. And it's, you know, do you have enough cutting boards? Do you have enough chef knives? Do you have enough measuring cups and spoons? And so how this one came to be is that I would realize that I'd go to cook dinner and I'd need something. I'd be like, oh, it's in the dishwasher. Now I've got to go hand wash that before I can even, you know, continue on with my dinner. And so I have found that you could go spend $5 on some new measuring cups and you could save yourself some frustration like every single day. And so it's not just about, you know, the big ticket items. A lot of times the biggest benefit is from the smaller ones. Okay, step 4, stocking your kitchen. So this is having your staple ingredients on hand. So I give people basically like, here's what I feel like are kind of the, you know, your staples, but every family has their own. And it's basically getting to the point where every week when you grocery shop, you make sure that you have those staple ingredients on hand, whether you plan to use them or not. And you just have so much more freedom and flexibility in terms of actually executing a meal when you've actually got the ingredients, you know, there already. So step 5 is where we get into the meal planning. So all the other stuff of my meal planning process, you know, isn't even the meal planning. And so into step 5 is where we're at now. So that is one time of a week, writing down a meal plan using, I have a meal planning template that I think it can be really helpful for people to think through that. It's grocery shopping one time a week, but it's really having an intentionality into your meal planning. And then the last step is step 6, and that's executing the meal. And so that is going through how to make your time in the kitchen as efficient as possible. It's things like printing out your recipe, having all of your ingredients on hand, reading through your entire recipe so you're not surprised, you know, as you get halfway through your meal and you're like, oh no, I was supposed to do, you know, this. But it's really just setting yourself up for success so that you can, 30-minute meal ends up being a 30-minute meal and not a 90-minute meal. So
I love it.
There it is.
Did that take us all the way to 6? 5 was planning. Did I miss 6?
Executing it, making the meal.
That's the part I struggle with right there. That's why I missed it. Okay. Awesome. So do you think, you talked about meal planning in step 5. Tell us like why you think this is important. And I know for me, I get to like Sunday and I'm like, oh, I should do my meal planning. And I always find like 12 other things that I could be doing.
Well, okay. So I think people, when they look at meal planning, they feel like, okay, that's going to be a lot of time and effort, but it's like, it's time and effort that you're sort of allotting, you know? So you may say, I'm going to spend this hour to do meal planning. And that might feel like, where am I going to find an hour? But the truth of it is you're already thinking about it almost every day. And so if you really look at how much time you're stressing about it, thinking about it, grocery shopping on a day in, day out basis, you save so much time by thinking about it one time a week. And so I do have some more data about that. So as I had people going through my process, they were telling me how long it was taking them to do these steps. And so in the first couple weeks of their meal planning, it was about an hour to sit down, create their grocery list, do their meal plan. But when they got into week 3 and 4, it was 30 minutes. And that's the experience that I have, but it was good to see like, okay, people who aren't as familiar with this, can they get it to be 30 minutes? And it really is. And so when you think about the 30 minutes every single day, you're probably thinking about it and you've put that all in one day. I mean, it truly is a big time saver. Other thing is saving money. I mean, there's so many things here. There's not eating out as much. There's not impulse buying. You know, when you go to the store and you're just like, well, I'm going to buy, you know, pick all of these things because I don't know what I'm going to do, but you know, and just being in the store multiple times, you just have more opportunity, especially if you've got a child with you and they want, you know, this and that and the other. And you know, you go in for $20 worth of stuff and walk out with a $50 bill. And it's like, and then ultimately that all boils down to less stress. One of the things that I measured through my little guinea pig process was how stressful was the act or the thought of meal planning and cooking dinner. And that in all cases, it got reduced. And people felt in control of their dinner time. They felt in charge of it. It wasn't something that was being done to them. It was like they were in the driver's seat of like their evenings. And so it was less stress. So I could go on, but it's, you know, there's so many reasons why I think it's important.
Yeah. Well, I can add my experience to that. So when I went through your program, I even went so far as to buy one of those letter boards. And so kids on Sundays will help me plan the meals and they get to like take turns having more input into what we have for dinner, you know? And I will tell you, the week that I don't make that a priority and like plan the meals and put it on the letter board are the worst weeks.
Yes, I know it. I mean, and I can't say about 1,000. I mean, I meal plan almost every week and it's gotten even better as now I'm putting myself out there as the meal planner. It's like, of course I've got to plan my meals every week. So if the accountability has been great, but you know, I have had periods of time where I haven't, and it's the same thing. It's like, I'm lost. You know, I don't feel grounded. I feel like I'm out of control. And yeah, it's just, it's not a good way to go through the week. And then you just, you know, you're snippy with your kids, you're snippy with other things because your anxiety kind of, you know, bleeds through in your other interactions with people.
It's true. And to have that board up that set, you know, I only have to think about it once. I think about it on Sunday and then I don't have to think about it really again. And, you know, sometimes the week gets out of control and like my Monday meal isn't going to work, but I can, yeah. I can pull from that board and be like, oh, if I do my Thursday meal on Monday, then I've got that other meal on Thursday. And it's just like so nice to have that right there and to be able to use it the way that you need it. Yeah. I can definitely attest. I love it. So research shows countless benefits of the importance of regular family mealtimes. What are some of the benefits you've seen personally in your own family and in those that you've worked with over the years of having a regular family mealtime?
Well, I think the biggest thing is just having that togetherness, and especially in a world we're all so busy and we are all running here, there, and everywhere. And to just sort of have that time where, you know, family time is a priority, dinner time is a priority, opening up that conversation, especially, you know, as my kids are getting older and they don't really want to talk anymore, you know, it's like, okay, now I've got a captive audience and you're going to sit here and we're going to, you know, talk about, you know, something. But I really just think it's that togetherness. And, you know, as I was talking about some of my whys with just having that home culture of like food, just when I think about like growing up and going to my grandmother's house, I think about food and it was nurturing and it was like you could always open up grandma's refrigerator and there was always, you know, something to eat, and it just felt like home and such a comfort. And so I just think that it kind of, you know, when you make family dinners a priority, you are instilling that same kind of culture into your own home. And, you know, just talking to friends and even some family members who didn't have like dinner times growing up and they always ate out or grabbed this and that, and then sort of being in my home where we do that every night, it's like, oh, you know, how awesome is this? You know, it's just such a different, you know, dynamic. And, you know, again, that's always been a priority of mine. And it's, you know, my kids don't know any different, so I'm sure they take it for granted. But I like to think that at some point they'll look back and they'll think like, you know, just home felt comfort, you know, comforting. So
yeah, it's so true. And for me, I have two teenagers in the house now and they both have cell phones, and not that we're perfect at this, but family, there are no phones allowed at the family dinner table. So it's even if it's a small amount of time that I have full attention, all of my family members sitting around the table with no distractions. And it's like really good for them, I think. Yeah. And on the weeks where I'm really good at family dinner, I mean, there's definitely weeks that I'm not, but it does draw my kids home at dinner time. You know, if they're studying with a friend or like my son works, but he will make it a point to come home when he knows that dinner is there waiting for him.
So yeah, that's awesome. I love that.
It definitely, definitely draws your kids home and close to you and, you know, builds those memories. I mean, they say that memories are solidified when all the senses are engaged. Uh-huh. And food is definitely such a great way to solidify those memories, because you've got taste and smell and sight, and all the senses are engaged when you're eating food. And so if you can make that a regular occurrence with your family, then you've kind of solidified your family into their memories.
Yeah. And I'll just add on to that, when we talk about, you know, how stressful dinner time can be, is that when you don't make dinner time stressful, you know, when you're not like flying by the seat of your pants or rushed or, you know, I mean, because I, even though I plan, I mean, things happen, and, you know, there's some nights where it's just, you know, crazy town in my kitchen. And it's like on those nights, I'm short and I'm, you know, it's like you can't enjoy it as much, but it's like when I am prepared and I'm able to kind of go into like the cooking dinner process and not be completely overwhelmed and my kitchen's already clean, it's like, I can enjoy it, you know? And I know that rubs off on the kids, you know, they just feel a different energy, you know, in the house. And so it's like, I have to remember, it's not even just about my own stress level and anxiety. It's like, what kind of energy am I putting out in my home? And, you know, I don't want to be the mom that yells all the time and the mom that snaps. I want to be able to be the patient, loving, nurturing, you know, mom. But when I'm stressed and I'm just not, don't feel in control, it's very easy for those, you know, more negative behaviors to rub off on them, for sure.
Yeah. And I definitely think you nailed it with the energy and the example, because I don't think we realize how much our kids are watching us.
Yeah.
So this past week, I have been so sick in bed like every day. And my 13-year-old daughter just took over dinner time, and she cooked for the family. And she brought, the day that I was the most sick and I didn't ever get out of bed, I mean, she brought me on a tray dinner, like three courses. You know, she's very much into like dessert and, you know, having all of the different parts of the meal. And it's like so nice that it doesn't always have to be me. It's rubbing off on my kids, and my girls are happy to help in the kitchen and take over when needs be. And so, yeah, remember that our kids are always watching us. So what do you want to portray about dinner time to them?
Yes, exactly.
All right. So here's my signature question for you. If you had the undivided attention of everyone in the world for just 5 minutes, what is the most important thing you could teach them about how to succeed at planning and executing healthy family mealtimes?
Okay. So I don't have exactly just one answer for this, but I've got a few kind of short ones.
Let's hear it.
So I would say to first keep it simple, and I can get into these a little bit more. Second, start being intentional. You know, like if you do nothing else, just start being intentional about it. Stop being negative. So just really try to check yourself when there's negative self-talk and making excuses about it. And then the fourth thing would be having a backup plan. So I really think it's easy for people to make this whole dinner time process more complicated than it needs to be, and meal planning more complicated. And I think a lot of times people say, I want to start meal planning. And so they think they've got to go find 5 new recipes on Pinterest, you know? and make all, you know, 5 all new things, you know, that next week. And they end up like, oh my gosh, this isn't easy. Like, you know, this was crazy. And I'm like, because you did too much. Like, you've got to keep it simple. You know, don't start trying to find all new recipes. Start with what you already make. Just be intentional about thinking about what of those things that you're going to make. And so I think that, you know, where people run into problems, it's they try to do too much and it's not sustainable. And so keeping it simple, I think, is really like the biggest thing to having success. So that's what I would say.
I love it. Perfect. What are you working on right now that you are most excited about?
Okay. Well, I have 2 things kind of going on right now. So the first thing is that part of this whole, you know, creating my process was really to write a book about it. And so I am in the middle of writing a book. It's called Biscuits and Crazy, The Busy Mom's Guide to Dominate Dinner. And I'm about 30% done in terms of my word count. So it's a work in progress, but I'm just so excited about it because I have way more to say about it than I even thought I did. So I'm going to like start writing and outlining, but I'm really excited for when that project is completed. And then the other thing too that has been sort of a unexpected little thing is my Facebook group. So I started a Dominate Dinner Facebook group initially for people that wanted or that were my guinea pigs and going through my process. And then I ended up opening it up to other people and it has been growing so much and it's really creating this whole community, but mostly women, a couple of men who just want to improve their dinner time. They want to share recipes and tips and they want to learn and just really support and encourage one another. And it's just been such a great place. And I've just been so pleasantly surprised by the growth in there and just the people that are just coming and posting what they've made for dinner and, you know, their questions or their, you know, struggles. And so I'm just loving that so much. So those are the 2 things I've got going on.
Well, Jessica, I think what you're doing is amazing. And I personally am so, so grateful for what you're doing. Where can my listeners find you and learn more about your Dominate Dinner program and all of the other great information that you offer about dinner?
So the Facebook group is probably the best place to go for that. So I have my entire meal planning process on my Facebook group. It's in the units. It's free. So you can go check out the entire packet. I also have my templates out there. I share some of my recipes. So it's a Facebook group and it's Dominate Dinner. So if you go search on Facebook, you will find me. And then I am on Instagram as well. And that's at Jess_biscuitsandcrazy. So you can find me either of those places.
Perfect. Thank you so, so much.
Okay. So what's so interesting about that episode is that we recorded it long before Corona was a thing, but I feel like it's so appropriate for right now when we're all trying to just make the best of everything that's happening right now. And what a wonderful time to focus on the basics like family dinner. I'm grateful for Jessica and the work that she does in the world, and going through her program truly did make dinner time a lot easier for me. And that was several months ago. And I'm really able to implement a lot of those things now and have my kids be a part of creating a doable dinner time routine that I'm really proud of and I really love for our family. So make sure you go check out Jessica's Facebook group because there is a lot of value valuable information in there. Next week, I'm going to share with you my 3-step framework for making any circumstance into a positive experience. So I hope you'll join us next week. And until then, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.